Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And we're going to take that mind power and put it into doggy power. That's right. We are going to be talking with a delightful lady today. Her name is Camilla Gray Nelson. Her book, and I love the cover, is called, it's got on it this wonderful little dog, and I don't remember the breed, and I know she's going to tell me. But it's titled Lipstick and the Leash, Dog Training, A Woman's Way. Camilla, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
I'll tell you what, I think we gals often approach training dogs in a much different way. But before we get into that, I want my audience to know that you have been given the elegant title of Dog Talk Diva. In fact,
you
even trademarked. I just absolutely love that. Now, you've been working with dogs for a lot of years, and you came from an environment, you were raised on a farm, being around animals, observing animals, it really makes a difference. And it's something that you just took to, like a duck does to water, and you just said, I want this as a part of my life. And you really, really do have a deep love for canines. Now, one I found when you go through your book, and you have so many good photographs in here. So for anyone who's having challenges with their animals, this is a very good book to have because you're not just reading information, you're actually getting a visual as well. So if you're like me, you want to say, okay, show me, I want to see it, then this is a book for you. Camilla, when you were coming up on the farm, you really had such a love for animals. Why is it you decided to focus on dogs in particular? Because I've known people from the farming area, maybe they get involved with veterinarian work, or they will say, I just want to deal with cows or with sheep or whatever. Why did you choose dogs?
Well, I didn't.
Dogs
chose me. In my vocation, I didn't choose my vocation. My vocation sort of found me. I didn't think to myself as a little girl, I want to be a dog trainer when I grow up. I just liked animals. I understood them because they were my friends. When I lived in the middle of nowhere, your playmates are the animals, and you must learn how to communicate to have a relationship. So that just was part of living and breathing for me. It wasn't until later on as an adult where I got my own dog as an adult, and I went to my first, you know, those big, giant public dog training classes that they give, noisy
well,
and crazy.
I know there are there, but I've never been in big, giant dog training classes.
Well, I went with one of my first dogs as an adult, and I remember on the way home telling my husband, well, what's the big whoop? This is so simple. Then when I got into the sport of dogs, because I actually started competing then in AKC obedience and winning titles, because it was just fun for me, but it was my avocation, not my vocation. When friends started asking me to help train their dogs, I gave them help, and then people I didn't know started asking. And that's when I thought to myself, light bulb moment, maybe I should charge a little for this. And that was the beginning of my dog training career, which just sort of took this tangential line like a locomotive, and here I am 24 years later.
Now, I'll tell you, dogs, to me, are very much like kids, and you made that remark in your book. And I'm going to quote a sentence, because this is especially oriented towards women, but you guys can benefit from it, too. Women that cannot control their dogs cannot control their children. Boy, amen to that. I will say, and I'm not perfect. I mean, that's not the issue. But I find that you have to set boundaries for dogs, just like you do for kids.
Absolutely, Donna. Yes.
This is not acceptable. This is okay. But, oh, my word, I've seen people with their animals, and I really have felt sorry for them, and I think many times with women, and it can happen with men, too, but they have a different perspective. Guys look at things a little differently. It's just the male attitude. But, by golly, I have seen women that have gotten so wrapped up in their animals, they literally cause emotional trauma for these dogs. And then they wonder why they go ballistic. Well, they're just like people. Gee whiz.
Well, it's that we are the really important nugget of information here, and it extends beyond dog training, is that the animal kingdom includes dogs, and guess what else it includes? It includes human beings. We're animals that walk on two legs and wear clothes, but we are closely related to all other social mammals. And because of that, every social mammal, that is a mammalian species that lives in a social group for survival, like a herd or a pack or a family, mm-hmm. require one thing at the base, and that is organizational structure. Leaders and followers. And leaders are chosen or create their position by setting boundaries. That is what creates the leader in an animal group. It's the one that says, do you want it? Not the one who says, do you want a cookie? But the leader is the one that says, excuse me, but I don't allow that.
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting phenomenon.
Yeah.
And we could go off on the social patternings in today's world and how this can actually relate to how the animal kingdom in the canine environment establishes structure and so on and so forth. But I wanted to talk about your myths because you have, well, let's see, you've got four myths here. One, myth number one, dogs are born with a desire to please their masters. Myth number two, a dog will protect his family because he loves them. Myth number three, a dog will not hurt someone he loves. And number four, puppies eventually grow out of bad behavior or you just love them through it. Let's take them one at a time because there was a part of me that didn't agree with some of these statements. I said, wait a minute, but you bring up some good points. So let's talk about myth number one, dogs are born with a desire to please.
That is the most commonly held belief about dogs that I have ever come across in my career. Dogs are animals with a singular drive to survive. Now, that means that they will put their own self-interest, when push comes to shove, above the interest of another. Mm-hmm. It's nothing personal. It's survival. Now, because dogs are also oriented towards pleasurable outcomes, here's where it gets a little muddy. A dog will do something that you like, and you pet him, or you give him a treat, or you tell him he's smart and handsome, you know, just like our husbands. So anyway, they do that, and then we think, when the dog does that behavior again, oh, he wants to please me. No, the dog wants the result of doing these behaviors that please you, because they want the petting, they want the cookie, they want their own self-interest satisfied. Do not be fooled that your dog wants to please you, because you're going to be waiting a very long time for that dog to come around to that way of thinking. But mm-hmm. they do respect and love power and authority when it is properly communicated, and I know we'll get into that.
Well, the aspect of them, it reminds me of small children. You look
Indeed.
At a group of small children, and they, believe it or not, if you watch them, you just observe. They're very self-centered.
Yeah.
They are totally preoccupied with me, 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 me. And I've seen this demonstrated so many times, and they need to be taught behaviors. That's where adults are supposed to set the boundaries and teach certain things, because it takes a maturation to, whether you're human or whether you're a canine, you have to grow through that. Because like you said, there is that survival essence. If you don't have, I mean, a baby, for example, is so helpless. It can't do anything. So what is it going to do to get your attention? It's going to scream.
Of course.
It's going to do everything it can to draw your attention. And it's
I'm
like
here.
Setting boundaries.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with a puppy. The same yes. thing with a puppy. And I know somebody may be saying, oh, my goodness, children are so different from dogs.
You know what? I always tell people, humans need to get over themselves.
I really
get over
so.
Themselves. We are more motivated by our instinctive reactions than we are through our intellectual thought. We react first, we think later, and many times we mm-hmm. are not able to overcome our instinctive drives. And I say that's what therapy's for. But dogs don't have therapy, so.
Well, that's true, although I know some people that say they do therapy for dogs. But anyway, what we have here is a situation where I think your book is so down to earth, and it brings things back into perspective. Now, this doesn't mean that you are horribly abusive to your dog or anything else, because this is definitely going to have a long-term effect on their psyche. But a dog protecting, myth number two, protecting his family because he loves them. Now, when I first read that, I said, wait a minute. I know that dogs have done certain activities and they have their territories and their boundaries and this type of thing. But we have animals that have rescued, but usually it's the older animal. It's not the younger animal, because the younger animal hasn't really developed the bond yet. That's a process. That's a trust mm-hmm. process of trust. And I think that that's something that people need to understand. If you really want to have a dog that's going to respond to you, it's that trust. It really, you have to earn it. It's not something that's just given
that's
to
right.
you.
It's trust and it is respect, born out of the proper communication of power, which is not about yelling and it's not about aggression. But, you know, mm-hmm. we'll get into that. But the fact that a dog will protect its property and everything in it, you're part of your dog's pack when an intruder mm-hmm. comes onto your property. And it's not because he loves you. It's because he's sounding the alarm that there is an intruder into the family group that does not belong there and could be dangerous.
Danger.
So that yeah. it's all about survival. All about
mm-hmm.
survival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we forget that. We get yeah. so much in our heads. We forget the basics of life that have enabled species to survive.
That is
and
correct. And
we are
do
one
that.
Of those species.
That's right. And it causes us to have unrealistic expectations for our dog.
Mm-hmm.
And a dog can just be a dog. That's all they can be.
But,
God knows I loved Lassie. I love that show. But a lot of the images in Lassie really helped create these unrealistic expectations for dogs.
Well, again, I think that that is a process of learning. I mean, we have people called the dog whisperers, the horse whisperers, mm-hmm. the cat whisperers. And they do seem to have a very special relationship, but most people don't have that. They have to cultivate it. There is training. There's discipline. And
yes.
this myth number three, boy, this is a big one, and I agree with this one. The myth is a dog will not hurt someone he loves. That's
oh,
not true. You must be alert. You don't leave little tiny babies alone.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, you just, there's things that people just don't get. I think of Siegfried and Roy with
yes.
the tiger
yes.
that drug him off the stage. You're ready to kill the animal, but the tiger responded in its most instinctual ways. Didn't attack him. It didn't kill him. It didn't try to destroy him. It was trying to protect him because it was reading the fact that he was in trouble. And so he was his, that was his job. That's the tiger's job, to drag him to a safe place. This is what he had to do. He was in trouble.
It's
and
about,
I,
yeah,
you know,
instinct.
It's amazing what people
yeah.
can't see.
You said a perfect word there, instinctive. Dogs are instinctive and reactive. Dogs are not thoughtful. They're instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
Key difference. And if you realize that you're dealing with an instinctively motivated, reactive animal, your life is so much safer but it's this false sense of security in, you know, living with a dog that gets so many children, especially children and adults, into the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a kid climb over a fence into someone's yard.
Yes.
Poor pit bulls. They have been given a horrible, horrible reputation.
They're just dogs.
Because of these incidences, and most of the time, their space has been invaded.
Of course.
I mean, they just did what they were supposed to do, protect, and they said, oh, this is terrible. I agree. But why was the kid climbing over the fence? Why is a parent not being aware of this? And, of course, owners have to be responsible, too. It's, you know, there's that. But when you're going into their space, you better darn well. I know with my Scottish Terrier, and he's one of the sweetest animals in the world, but I put him on a lead when people come in because he's very vocal, and
yeah.
I insist that he behaves himself. I mean, he's got to stay, and as soon as everybody's in, then that's fine, no problem, once you're in the house. But by golly, until you cross that threshold, that's his job. That's what he feels is his job, and he's been this way since he was a puppy.
He's a dog.
And
yes.
By golly, this is the way it is. You need to know I'm here, and you need to know that I am, this is part of my job, period.
And you just did the most common and easy thing I tell all my clients that have territorial protective dogs. When the doorbell rings, put a leash on your dog. It's the simplest thing in the world. That way, guess what? You're able to set a behavioral boundary for
mm-hmm.
the dog. You're able to say to that dog by preventing him from going and jumping, no, honey, we don't do that. We don't do that. I don't allow that when company comes. And by setting a boundary, you become the boss. When you're the boss, the dog listens because they only listen to the boss. And everything takes a more upward trend instead of downward into chaos.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's one thing that you bring out is that when you're dealing with a dog, this is an animal that typically has its own pack. When you're bringing a dog into your home, when you're bringing it into your environment, you must establish the leadership role. And again, I think if you observe like the wolves in the wild, you have to earn your position. It's just not given to you.
You don't wear the T-shirt because they can't read.
That's right. So you need to give the example. And I can't tell you how difficult it's been with some members of the family that when they have a puppy, out comes a newspaper, and oh, if they have an axe, but you know, pound, pound, or you know, just scream at them or whatever. It doesn't work that way.
No.
It doesn't work that way. You need to train just like you do with children. Sounds ridiculously redundant, but it's the same thing. You establish the boundaries. This is not acceptable behavior.
And
eventually,
just,
they're going to be able to read you, and
yes.
then they'll respond. But it takes
yes.
some time.
It takes time, and it takes understanding what constitutes, what character does that leader animal, that natural leader animal in nature's world have. They're the same characteristics across the species. The same characteristics that made that lead cow in my dad's dairy herd are the same characteristics that you will see in an alpha dog in a dog pack, and I dare say the same characteristics you will see in a human leader. They are focused.
Mm-hmm.
They are in control of their emotions. They are not reactive. They do not scream. They do not go for aggression as their first tool in the toolbox. They are thoughtful. They are focused. They are measured. They keep their voice level this way,
mm-hmm.
like I'm speaking now, which is the huge mistake that people make. They start screaming at their dog, or they raise their voice and start getting threatening. The reason that does not work, Donna, is that because in the animal world, the animals that are too vociferous, too reactive, and all those emotional characteristics, those are the pretenders. Those are the wannabes. Those are the faux leaders and all of the animals, this is important, ignore them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing, isn't it?
It is. Fascinating.
I just think that if you take time to just observe nature, and she teaches so much. I mean, but you have to stay still long enough. And this isn't a Disney cartoon. Thank you very much. It is, we have to, I think, as intelligent, supposedly, beings, we need to be still enough to observe. Now, one of the things that I think when people are looking at getting a dog, and I've heard this for so many years, and I concur with it, you need to study your breed. You need to be able to recognize certain personality traits. And as I mentioned, we have a Scottish Terrier, Victor. Terriers are notoriously independent. I mean, they'll just sit and look at you and say, well, you've told me something. Let me think about it. I'll give it about a 30 seconds.
Yes, exactly. I'll get back to you on that.
That's right. Send me an email is basically what they're saying, whatever dog email.
Talk to my people.
That's right. And it is so amazing. And they're very much like cats. Very much like cats. In fact, we say Scottish Terriers in our household are very much cats in a dog's body. Because you can see the wheels turning. They're really analyzing the person that's in front of them. And they size you up real fast. They really, really do. It's amazing.
Indeed.
But you have in your book a lot of photography, which I just loved. And you talk about posturing, and you talk about the power is in the positioning, and you talk about the training. And I think that this is something that often people have a challenge with, because maybe a woman especially is of a gentler positioning. She doesn't want to be aggressive, but she, in having a dog and being with a dog, dependent on the breed she's got, she's going to, I think, learn a lot about herself, and she needs to know that this could be a very good team effect, because you're going to be learning how to stand tall, when to bend over, so as far as communicating with your animal so that you are going to be in that leadership positioning. What are the things women can learn from working with dogs?
Well, you said it in that paragraph just there. I, over the years, have realized I'm really not teaching dog training. I am teaching power and leadership skills to my clients through the dog as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are all animals, and we all respond to the same things, to the same input, to the same criteria. Once you learn the secret of communicating power and authority to your dog without yelling, without punishment, but how to speak in a way that says, this is what I expect, and here's the pros and cons, here's the rewards, and here's the consequence. I'm not angry. I'm not mean. This is just how I want it and how it needs to be. And not be afraid to follow through. You have learned how to manage children. You've learned how to manage your staff if you're in business. You've learned how to cajole that. Let's say you have a very difficult dog. Let's say you have a Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot come head-to-head, fist-to-fist, with an independent breed.
Right.
You have to learn how to work through the margins. Softly set your boundaries. Don't go head-to-head, fist-to-fist, eyeball-to-eyeball, because you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
The power of praise and all of those complex things, depending on the personality of dog you're dealing with, you have those same personalities in people. It is the most fascinating job. It's the most fascinating profession I can think of having. I call myself an empowerment specialist. I don't call myself a dog trainer.
Mm-hmm. I have to chuckle when you're talking about personalities of animals, because there are these cartoonists that will draw dogs that look identical to the owners.
Yes,
and I laugh at those. I just love them. It's the gal that's wearing the, particular doggy coat, or she's got a copy of the doggy coat that's on her dog and all this stuff.
Right,
it's
right.
Just hysterical. I mean, they just really are so much fun. But so many times that's true. But lots of times people will pick dogs that really don't suit their temperament. And I think of a young woman. She was in her 20s. She lived in an apartment. And she had a huge, huge dog. And this dog was tethered to a tree outside. And she was having, this was with one of my Scotties a few years ago. I happened to be in this class with her. And she could not manage this dog. She was about 5 feet tall, maybe weighed about 95 to 100 pounds. This dog dragged her around like she was just nothing more than a marshmallow. And the woman that was teaching the class said to her, this is the wrong dog for you. Number one, you're not giving the animal enough attention. This is a big dog. He needs big space. Yeah. You cannot keep him in a dinky little apartment and then just come home and in 2 hours everything's fine. She said, you need to find a home for this dog and get yourself another dog. Mm-hmm. Now, somehow or another, this woman thought having this big dog was going to protect her, I guess, or whatever. But she couldn't manage it. How can someone go about choosing the right kind of animal for them? Because dogs are responsibility. Any animal you have as a pet is a responsibility. You've got to know what is really going to fit with you.
You do. And in Lipstick and the Leash, I have a chapter on a whole section on recognizing dog personalities. And it's much more complex than I have time to deal with in that chapter in the book. But the basics are this. Your personality has to be naturally a little stronger, a little more confident than your dog's personality. If you are someone who just wants everybody to be happy all the time, you know, you just want to make sure you're serving all your friends, and you don't want any rough waters, and you're accommodating here. You don't like confrontation. You do not want to get a super confident dog, because that dog will naturally overpower you. On the other hand, in your voice, Donna, I can hear backbone. Mm-hmm. I hear it. It comes through even in your voice. You're not afraid of setting rules and being in charge. That doesn't frighten you like it then frightens some women. So a Scottie, a terrier, is great for you. Because you, just by your nature, your basic personality of confidence, can handle a confident dog. And I give keys on how to recognize the dog personalities, the ears, the eyes, how they wag their tail. You can, if you know what you're looking at, even in a puppy, you can tell whether that dog is more of a subordinate personality or a more dominant personality. And there's nothing wrong with dominant, as long as you're dominant too. So you can match him stride for stride and sort of lead the way for him. Nothing wrong with that, but you have to be the right personality for a dominant dog.
I know we don't have a whole bunch of time left here, but this is such a wonderful book, Lipstick and the Leash. And I really like your training can that you've got in here. And I know that, again, we're not going to have a chance to go into this very much. But for those of you that find it difficult to get your dog's attention, or you have allowed certain behaviors, and I said allowed certain behaviors because really that's what it boils down to.
Yes.
You have allowed certain behaviors to evolve, but they can change. And old dogs can learn new tricks. I can testify to that. But it's consistency, it's follow-through, it is love, it is trust, it is respect. It's all of the components that we really want in our own lives as human beings, because we're part of the animal species. And the animals want it, too. They really, really want that. And, boy, then you have got a teamwork that is absolutely phenomenal. And there's
a
magic then that occurs.
I
just think that dogs are so very, very special. You go into special training collars. I mean, this book is so well done. And again, I like the photographs because it shows. I'm more of a visual person. And someone can talk my ears off and I'll just go, okay, give me a break. I want you to show me. I want you to show me the body language. I want you to show me what it is. And then I get it. It's as if I can hear it, but I got to see it. And I'm sure many people listening to this show are of that same nature. And maybe they have even got a problem dog at this time, wondering, how do I deal with this? Well, lipstick and the leash, dog training a woman's way. This is going to be an amazing addition to your library. And as we all know, sometimes our friends aren't with us for that long. So if you're fortunate enough where you have a dog that lives 15 or 16 years, rarely do they ever make it to 20, and you're going to get yourself a puppy, or even if you're getting a rescue dog, this book, Lipstick and the Leash, is going to give you tools that will enable you to enjoy the animal, number one, feel comfortable with your own capabilities, and end up having a wonderful addition to your life. Camilla, your websites, you have two.
Dogs I do. Lipstickandtheleash.com.
And then dogtalkdiva.com. I love the dog
talk. And on dogtalkdiva.com, there is a store, a link to my store, where I have training cans and tethers and wonderful things I talk about in the book, and then you can actually get them because they're not available on the open market. So.
Oh, this is wonderful. Camilla Gray Nelson, you have done an awesome job with the book Lipstick and the Leash. I just think it is fabulous, and I'm so delighted that I had a chance to have you on the air. Happy holidays to you, and for those of you listening, again, dogtalkdiva.com, lipstickandtheleash.com. We're taking a break. Again, thanks so much, Camilla. We're going to be back in just a minute.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, which I would be delighted to do, give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I'll share with you, since we've been talking about dog training, one of the things, and I don't know where I got this concept, that whenever we were ready to get a Scotty, a little pup, because the Scottish Terrier has been my husband's favorite dog since he was just a little boy, and he just fell in love with it, and he decided after doing a lot of research that he wanted a dog that was very adaptable, wasn't too big, that could live in an apartment on a farm anywhere, and Scotties are pretty much that way, and they're very independent. So anyway, that's how I ended up having an ongoing love affair with Scotties, is because of my husband. And the very first Scotty we had as a couple, we were in Northern California, and my husband was doing a job up there. He had been transferred, and I wasn't with him. I had to take care of making sure everything was going to be moved properly, et cetera, the normal gal's work that you have to do. And when he got to the place that we were going to be living, he finds his throwaway paper. And in the paper, there is a listing for Scotties. And it was in an area called Pittsburgh, California. And I said, you know, I have never really had a dog of my own. My brother had a dog, but I'd never had a dog of my own. And I'd always said if I couldn't take care of a dog, I wasn't going to have it. Well, I was at a time in my life where that was going to be an opportunity for me to have. And we ended up going to a home, and all of the puppies were out. There was this beautiful litter. The mother was just absolutely a gorgeous Scottie. And I sat down on the floor. And I said, I'm just going to watch the puppies. I'm not going to do anything. Well, what was interesting is that Mama and all of the puppies went out through the doggy door, excepting for one. And this little puppy walks over to me and crawls into my lap. And my husband said, well, I think you've got your puppy. The little girl of the household there, she comes over. This happened to be her favorite puppy. And she picked him up, and she must have been all of about four, just a little tiny thing. And she picks up the puppy and ambles over to the couch, which was very close by. And she's going to show me how she's going to comb the puppy and this type of thing. Well, the little puppy wiggled out of her arms, and the next thing I know, he's right in my lap. Now, I had not said a word to this dog. This animal came and sought me out, and the amazing thing about that, and we called him Mr. Smoke, that was his name. The amazing thing about Mr. Smoke is that there was such a bond between this dog and myself, and he was the one that had chosen me. It was a very profound experience, and I'll add a little segment. A year before this dog became ours, I had had a dream. It was very, very vivid in detail. We had gone to a house, we were going to go to a house, and this little dog was out in the yard playing. Now, this was a dream I had a year before the actual experience of being in this area in Pittsburgh, California, where this puppy crawled into my lap. It was almost a year to the day later that that dog was in our family. And I have a very special feeling about animals. And I really think many times they can choose you. They will let you know that they want to be with you. And there is a communication that goes on that's very unique and very special. And I think when you work with animals or you're around certain environments, including animals, you'll notice this. You'll notice this about birds. You will notice this about all kinds of critters. And it's a phenomena that once you experience it and you feel it, you're so sensitive to other things that go on. But like Camilla said, you need to pay attention to animals, because animals, just like people, some are going to be shy, some are going to be very soft, others are going to be the power, and you got everything in between. I think they're fascinating. I really do. But all of our Scotties have come to us, and they have always recognized that this was their home when they came. And it really is amazing to watch. And so many times when people are wanting to adopt rescue animals, they don't realize they need to become aware of whatever that animal has gone through and what kind of a feel do you have. There's a lot of things that go on there. Because when you're dealing with animals that have been rescued, some of them have been abused terribly. Others just are not wanted anymore, and they go through adjustments and traumas because maybe they have formed a very strong bond with a human being, and that human being was their entire life, and now it's no longer the case. There's all of these adjustments. So animals, birds, species of on this planet do have their personalities, they do have relationships with people, and it can be good, bad, or indifferent. But when you bring that into your environment, I think being mindful of the various aspects of how they express themselves really does make a huge, huge difference. And I just am very grateful for our experience with these little terriers because they are so much fun. But they are feisty. And by golly, they will just run your life like you would not believe. So you have to be the person that is going to be, you might say, the leader of the pack. And you can do that just as Camilla described, in a gentle way. You don't have to be violent with them at all. And believe me, they will once in a while get out of line, but pretty much they will hold true to what you expect of them. I want to give out the number again, 888-627-6008, if you'd like to chat with me. But I want to talk about a woman. Her name is Dorothy Arnold. Now, this woman lived in New York, and she disappeared. No one has ever been able to find out what happened to her. Now, when did this occur? It was during the month of December. In fact, it was on the 12th of December in 1910. Dorothy, at the time, was 25 years old. She was the daughter of a very socially prominent, wealthy importer. She loved New York. That was her home. And she just disappeared. Nobody could find her. Now, she was very, very well-dressed at the time of her disappearance. She was very distinctive in her attire. You knew that she was a woman of social standing. And, of course, in New York, as then as now, you walk to where you want to go. And she had walked 2 miles to a shop where she purchased some chocolates, and she went to a bookstore. And she picked up a particular book, and of course the person that ran the bookstore recognized her. And she bumped into a friend, and they chatted. It was great. She crossed Fifth Avenue, walking towards Central Park. She was never seen again. Now, the disappearance was kept quiet. Nobody was going to let the news media of the day find out about it. Pinkerton's detective agency was hired. There was also a family friend by the name of John Keith who checked out everything, hospitals, the jails, morgues. They wondered if she had run off with a boyfriend that the family wasn't particularly happy with. His name was George Griscom. But George, at the time of her disappearance, wasn't in New York. He was in Italy. Well, it was 6 weeks after her disappearance. The police were finally notified. And they spent a lot of money, the family did, trying to find out about their missing daughter. Now, something surfaced during the police investigation. Griscom had gotten some letters, her boyfriend. In these letters from Dorothy, she had become quite despondent because there was a rejection of one of her stories she had submitted to a magazine. And she said, "All I can see ahead is a long road with no turn." So a lot of people had a lot of theories. Her dad thought she had been murdered, and her body had been thrown into a local reservoir. People speculated amnesia, suicide, maybe she had had an abortion, all of this. But there was nothing. Nothing was found to do that. But there was a man that brought attention to the fact that on the day Dorothy disappeared, a white swan had appeared in Central Park near the entrance next to which the heiress lived. And the director of the park menagerie was really puzzled by seeing the bird because he said there had never, ever been previously a record of a swan in the park. They still, to this day, do not know what happened to 25-year-old Dorothy Arnold on December 12th, 1910. A mystery, a cold case, as we would call it in today's world. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow, we have a fascinating guest, Joe Mason. We're going to be talking about bankrupt at birth. Now, this is addressing a subject that many people just are not aware of, and that is fraud and theft of our children's Social Security and their identity. That's right. Who would have ever imagined that a child's identity can actually be stolen? Well, we're going to be talking with Joe Mason about that tomorrow. And we have a wonderful lineup of guests. And in a few days before the new year, we will be putting out information on the upcoming guests that are going to be on the Donna Sebo Show. In the meantime, we're going to take a break here. We've got a wonderful lineup of people for the new year. I'm so excited. 2013 is going to be absolutely dynamic. Oh, what adventures we're going to have. So when we come back, I want to share a story with you, and we will be maybe even sharing a recipe or two. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number is 888-627-6008. I want to share a little bit of an email from someone that is a reader of my newsletter, and this individual has just had the most wonderful experience. What it is her husband, his name is Daryl, and they live up in Anchorage, Alaska. She said, we have some fabulous news. He has always wanted, we're going to give a little bit of background. Daryl has always wanted to have a beaver hat. Well, if you've ever lived in the northern climates, you know how brutally cold it is. And in truth, the warmest thing you can ever have is not synthetic man-made clothing, but actual animal skins. So a beaver hat, when you're out in below zero weather, is really going to keep your head and your ears warm because you have the flaps that come down, and it's just incredible to wear. Well, he'd always wanted one. So in the course of conversation, he had mentioned to someone that he wanted to do this, and his friend's name was John. And John used to be a trapper like Daryl was, but he's not doing it anymore. And he will take furs from people and make hats out of them. What evolved is just, to me, quite fascinating, because what happened is John, his wife, Kathy, has a son in the Navy. And the son, Kathy's son, happens to be the third officer on a new ship of the USS Anchorage, which is an amphibious transport dock ship. Now, there used to be a USS Anchorage, but it was decommissioned in 2003. Anyway, John said that the USS Anchorage is going to be going into Anchorage during the month of May, and they wanted the mayor to present them with a set of moose horns instead of the usual key to the city. The reason being is that the mascot of the USS Anchorage is the moose. So John was wondering if Daryl had a set of moose horns that he would sell to the Navy to be permanently mounted in the ward room of the ship. And the ship is going to be based in San Diego, and it's going to travel all over the Pacific Ocean. Well, Daryl said, sure. He said, I'd be happy to do this. And he said, they don't need to buy it from me. I'll donate it to them. And Daryl has these huge, huge racks of moose horns that are just unbelievably large. I mean, it's like 6 to 9 feet from tip of one moose horn to the other. They're just massive. So they took some pictures of the moose horn and emailed them to the ship. And it was about a week later, they got a call from the captain And he, along with a second officer and another officer, wanted to come and visit my friend Mary and her husband, Daryl. They were in town because they were doing setup and preparations for the USS Anchorage to go there in May. And they saw them, and they were so excited to get them. And they said it was really going to be a wonderful morale booster for the crew. And Daryl was given a special medallion and presented to him in a very special way. However, the subject came up that they'd like another set of the horns because they found that, or they have a concern, that when they are setting these horns up, we're concerned they might get damaged. And Daryl was asked if a second set of horns could be provided, and he said, sure. I have more than one rack of these, so I will be happy to do that. And what has happened is that a number of people have gotten involved with this. The horns for the wardroom are going to be mounted by the Rust Knight's taxidermy, and the horns for the bow of the ship, they're going to put it on the bow of the ship, the second set of horns. It's going to be, these horns are going to be shipped down to San Diego, and Linden Transport is going to accommodate this and give them free transportation so that it's going to all go on the USS Anchorage. And there's going to be a brass plaque giving Daryl recognition for donating the horns, and it's going to have the ship's name, the commission date, and all the other pertinent information. What a special event. And as my girlfriend Mary said, she said it all started with an inquiry about acquiring a beaver, a hat. And I love this story because you never know how something you may ask for is going to bring you a gift of something else. In a million years, Daryl would never have imagined that these horns that have been hanging in his own home on walls for years would end up being on the USS Anchorage that's going to be sailing the Pacific for the rest of its seafaring life. An incredible story. And I just thought, this is synchronicity in action. It's like the right people being in the right place at the right time and everything coming together. And who would have ever thought a moose would have been a mascot for the U.S. Navy? Donna Sebo here. I wanted to just share quickly with you a little poem that a delightful lady has written, and it's relative to the winter months. And I've got a photo in front of me of this brilliant red cardinal that just thrives in the winter months, especially on the East Coast. And here is this beautiful cardinal all fluffed up against the cold, and this poem by Dela Temme. The hedge is blanketed with snow now, soft as velvet, where the cardinal sleeps, wings close to its sides to keep the cold out. Beautiful visual right along with the wonderful words. So I wanted to share that with you. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we are going to be talking about kids and how adults need to be aware they have to be protected from identity theft. And I want you to know we've got some other wonderful people, powerful people. This is going to be not only a dynamic week, but remember that 2013 is really going to be a powerful year for so many of us. And you need to look forward to 2013. So many people were looking backwards, in my mind's view, because they want the end of a world. Well, I know of someone that says, at any given moment, someone is experiencing the end of their world. But remember, if something in your life you find is phasing out, that means that you have an opportunity for something new to be phased in. You have an opportunity to live your life with a sense of adventure. And that's what I would love for you to experience. That's what I want you to go into 2013 with, is this joy of life, whether it is cultivating a new talent, whether it is getting rid of clutter in the house, whatever it is, I want you to open yourself up to the realm of possibilities. You don't know where your good is going to come from. And you need to have the expectation, but don't try to fit it in a box. Daryl would never, ever have known that something that he had owned for so many years could have a place of honor in a ship that hadn't even been built. And that's exactly what's happened with him. In a million years, he would never have imagined that that was going to happen to him. But it is. Magic can happen to you. It happens every day of your life. Every time you take a breath, that's magic. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless you. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are on this planet of ours. And we'll be talking with you tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.